works. So let's take a look. Okay, O Zayin, page 172, Or Gedaliah in the Likutei Diburim for Shavuos, O Zayin. Yadua ki inyan hagalus hu, shebnei Yisrael yihyu bein haumos, v'yalu hanitzoitzin shel kedusha sheyesh b'chol hamedinos. Explains our Rebbe of Gedaliah Shor Zatzal, that one of the main reasons that Jews go into galus is not just a punishment. Now, we think of galus as a punishment. If we're not worthy of Eretz Yisrael, so we get exiled. But on a certain level, every time a Jew goes into galus, wherever we wander in the world, we're on a mission. And what is the nature of the mission? To collect nitzoitzon shel kedusha, to collect holy sparks, which are found amongst all of the medinos. The way that it's explained, the way that we understand it, again on some small level, is that from the time that Adam HaRishon sinned, there was some type of shattering of the universe, some type of Shviras HaKelim, some type of breakage that maybe even goes back to creation itself, prior to Adam's sin, but certainly whenever there's Averos, we cause Kedusha to be distant from us, and we have to go and retrieve our lost objects. So the idea of Galus is traveling to different places in the world to somehow be metakin in that place, to do something holy in that place, to, so to speak, gather the lost sparks of holiness, and then to bring them back, to reunite and to unify all of the brokenness of the world. The purpose of galus is to go and to collect what? To collect souls, to find people in the world who will want to attach themselves to the Jewish people. In a certain sense, those souls, even though they're living in non-Jewish bodies, in a certain sense, they're Jewish souls that have sort of lost their way. And now when they convert, they come back to the Jewish people, so that is a reunification, it's a rectification, right, of those sparks. B'chol inyan shel geirim hu hanitzotzin shel kedusha shenaflu bein umos. Now obviously, why is he talking about this? So one of the greatest sparks that was ever retrieved is a spark by the name of Rus. A lost spark by the name of Rus, a spark which would of course become the lion of Malchus Beis David. Okay, so the idea of a ger of converts is bringing back to the Jewish people lost sparks. And what we see again, almost paradoxically, but I guess this is how Hashem always operates, is that sometimes what seems to be the most mibachutz is actually the most mibefnim. So you take Rabbi Akiva, who's the Rebbe of Rishon Bar Yochai, the teacher of Torah Shoal Peh, Pnimiyas HaTorah, Torah Shoal Peh, which you would say is the part of Torah which is most Jewish, Torah Shebechsav, the written Torah, one could argue has more of a sheiches to the Umas HaOlam than Torah Shoal Peh. And yet Dafka Torah Shoal Peh comes through who? Through Rabbi Akiva, who was a Ben Gerim, who was a son of converts, right? Malchus Beis David, Mashiach, Dafka comes from Rus, comes from Mav. So in an ironic way, sometimes the greatest, most, in quotes, most Jewish things come from external sources. And again, that's part of the ironic way Hashem runs the world. So the Rachaim HaKadosh asks the following question. Rachaim HaKadosh Hiksha. Hold on a second. So what happens if we don't do Averos and we don't need Galus? So then how do we gather those sparks? I mean, Galus, we're saying, if we are Chayav Liglos, we're Chayav Galus, so we go to Galus, and we hopefully bring back some spoils from that experience. But if we're not Chayav Galus, so then how do we get the pieces that need to be collected from Chutz La'aretz? Over a Chayav HaKadosh Hiksha, the Im Kain, Ilu lo chatu Yisrael, v'lo hayu tzrichen leilech legalus, how would we draw in those sparks if we had no obligation or if we had no punishment of going to Galus, which it is a punishment? So the Rachaim HaKadosh has a very interesting thing that he writes. He says, if we didn't sin, then Kedusha would be drawn to us. We would be like a magnet for Kedusha. Right? And Evan Ashoev is a magnet of Kedusha. In other words, we would just be able, the same way a magnet. So too, if we maintained our Kedusha, we would be magnets of Kedusha. And Kedusha, wherever it was scattered, would be pulled to us. Shai kedusha moshechas es kol hakedusha mibein ha'umos, that our kedusha would draw kedusha from the nations of the world at us or towards us. Ukishenaflu madregasa ma'idei chet hutuchu leilech legalos kedei lakabe tanitotzin shal kedusha. But when we messed up, when we do averos, when we lose our levels of kedusha, when we become sinful, so then we need to go to galus to go collect the sparks of kedusha. V'chein isa b'shem harizal, and this idea of again collecting nitzotzos is understood in this way: the concept of galus as a way of retrieving lost souls, retrieving sparks of holiness that have fallen into dark places. This is very much the inyan of galus. And if we're more worthy, then we have to travel less, and the kedusha comes to us. And if we're less worthy, then we have to go chase after the kedusha. It reminds me of the Gemara's description of the man. Where did the man fall? Where would a person receive their daily package of man? All right, did they have to go out and collect the man, or did the man come to them? So the Gemara actually says it depends on their madriga. The Gemara in Yoma and Daf Ayin Hayim at Aleph says that there were three groups when it came to the man. Tzaddikim would have the man fall at their doorstep, and people who were less righteous had to go out and chase the man very far in the fields. Hold on 1 second, Chavra. I need to pause for just a second. I'm being summoned. Okay, so let's go back. So the Gemara says there's three groups by the man. Yoma daf ayin hay. The Gemara says that if you were more righteous, the man was delivered to your front door. And if you were less righteous, you had to go farther after the man. You had to go chasing after the man. So again, it's the same idea that the more connected to Kedusha one is, so the more that a Kadosh Baruch Hu brings whatever they need to them. They become a magnet of Kedusha. It's also like the machlokus between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael about whether or not a Jew needs to go out and make a parnasa. Right? Rabbi Yishmael says we have to learn and we have to work. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, no, just learn all the time. How are we going to get food? How are we going to survive? So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, what do you mean? The Goyim will provide for us. Vasafta diganecha, that you'll have to be osek in the fields if you're not worthy, right? But if you're worthy, then the nations of the world will do it for you. That's the Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Hay. Okay, so the same idea here. The more holy we are, the less we need to wander around in Gullus to retrieve that which needs to be restored. Okay, let's go weiter. V'lechein anu roim bahar beit kufos bo'orech ha'galus, and we see this, by the way, historically, says Rav Gedalia Shor. There were massive Jewish communities. It's such a crazy idea. There were places in the world where there used to be such thriving, massive Jewish communities. And then whatever the ruling class or the leader of that particular country or the politics changed or the anti-Semitism grew, whatever it was, that there was some type of change in the heart of the rulers or the politicians of that particular place, and the Jews were kicked out. And nowadays, you couldn't find a Jew in those places. Right? Some places have a handful of Jews left. Some places, mamish, literally have nothing left. And what was once, a center of Jewish life and living has become desolate, and Jews don't go back there. Why? Because when we finished our avoda, and again, it's hard to know what's happening spiritually when we've completed the avoda, but Hashem with his hashkacha pratis guides it to be so, that Jews work there, and they live there, and they daven there, and they learn there, and they live Jewish life there, and they gather the sparks there. The kibsu kol hanitzotzin shel kedusha, az shuv ein lehem ma'alios bo'osam medina. And then Hashem says, okay, there's nothing left. There's no spiritual energy left in this place. There's nothing to collect. It's time to pack up and hit the road. And we're back. This is exactly the idea, by the way, of the Isser of going back to Mitzrayim. Right? How many times does the Torah say not to go back to Mitzrayim, Chavra? How many times are we told in the Torah not to return to Egypt? Three times. Three, but the Torah says don't go back to Mitzrayim. And part of the idea, al pipnimius, why we like to Mitzrayim, is that we had collected all of the nitzotzos that needed to be collected in Mitzrayim. And they talk about 288 reish peches nitzotzos, how that works, how many of them were in Mitzrayim, how many of them were elsewhere, right? Well, how much is left to do. Okay, we're finishing up. You can see that we're getting to the end here. We're getting very close to the end of spark collecting, and it's time to head back to Eretz Yisrael. So again, so after we had completed whatever the avoda was to collect the kedusha from that place, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu had it that the kings and the rulers would have a change of heart and kick us out. V'leiv melachim v'sarim b'yad Hashem. The hearts of kings and rulers is in the hand of Hashem, like the pasuk says. So Hashem all of a sudden made them not like the Jews anymore. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu misaviv hasibos shehamelech yigarish es b'nei Yisrael v'dinaso, and Hashem put it in the heart of that king to kick the Jews out of his land. And again, more often than not, you know, these thriving centers of Jewish life were never rebuilt. So we're done. The avoda spiritually is done. U'be'eshayu b'nei Yisrael b'rom ha'madrega azbo kol ha'nitzotzei ha'kedusha me'amedinos lahem. So again, when we're on a high level spiritually, so then the nitzotzos come to us. Where do we see an example of that? By Kabbalah Satorah itself. That Yisro Kohen Midian, here was this, you know, very distinguished Oved Avodah Zarah, that what was Niskariv Lebnei Yisrael, but Yisro was also a big soul. Yisro would be metakin some very great things amongst the Jewish people. He had some very, very good ideas, in addition to the fact that, you know, his relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu is one of the great wonders of Torah. But Yisro was pulled in. Like the pasuk says, that to you the Goyim will be drawn from the corners, from the far reaches of the earth. Okay, so again, so the more we are, again, it's a mission Pirkei Avos, the more we're makabel upon ourselves old Torah, right? So we're spared from old Malchus and old Derech Eretz. We don't have to run around to make Parnassah as much. The more we're able to sit in our place and have the things that need tikkun from the physical world, they'll be drawn to us, okay? Now, all of this is to introduce the beginning of Sefer Rus. Okay, just to review for a second, how does the story begin? How does Megillas Rus, a very short Sefer, for Prakim, how does it begin? It begins, Vayehi bimei shefot ha-shoftim, it was in the days when judges judged, Vayehi ra'av ba'aretz, and there was a famine in the land. Vayelech ish mi beis lechem Yehuda lagor b'stei Moav. A man from Beis Lechem Yehuda went to live in the fields of Moav. Hu v'ishto u'shnei banav. Who was the man? Elimelech. Who was his wife? Naomi. Who are shnei banav? Machlon and Kilion. Okay? That's who it was. At least on a revealed level. Now you look in the writings of Rav Moshe David Vali, the student of Ramchal. So he says, who is the man? Yisod. Who is the woman? Malchus. Who are the Shnei Banov? Netzach and Hod. Okay, fine. So for those Kabbalistically inclined, you can borrow the Kisvei Ramdu from me when I'm done pretending to understand it. Great. Okay, so good. So let's see. So Elimelech and Naomi hotzichu ligalos mi'aretz Yisrael. So now, why did Elimelech and Naomi and their family leave Eretz Yisrael to go to stay Moav? So you'll tell me, because there was a famine in the land. Right? But in truth, they were trying to find something very special. Not to say that it wasn't a chet that they left, as we'll see in a second. Right? Elimelech is criticized for leaving. Elimelech is going to die for abandoning the ship, so to speak. You look in the Midrashim, Medrash Rabbah on Rus. Elimelech is very much criticized for abandoning the people in a time of need. Although the Gemara in Bava Basra says, no, you know, he had no choice but to leave because of the famine. Okay, whatever it is. But al pipnimius, they were going to find something. And what they were going to find is a spark called Rus, which would lead us towards the Gula Shlema. So Elimelech v'Naomi hutzrichu liglos me'aretz Yisrael. They needed to experience galus me'aretz Yisrael. Va'af shezen nechshav lehem l'chait. And even though they're held accountable, again, we see Elimelech dies, and we see Naomi suffers terribly. She comes back a bitter woman. She says, don't call me Naomi anymore. A lashon of Noam, right? Of Ne'imus, call me Mara. Call me the bitter one. My life's been ruined. Aval tachlis hagalus shalahem, hayelakavei tanitzoytzei kedusha, mibein amon umov. They were collecting sparks, like amongst the thing that is in some ways the least Jewish, right? The antithesis of of Jewish life is Ammon and Moab. The Torah says that an Ammoni and a Moabi can't convert. And we have a whole drasha that's only for a man from Ammon or a man from Moab, but a woman from Ammon or Moab actually can convert, but it was very controversial. The very conversion of Rus is controversial. The legitimacy of David HaMelech is very controversial, right? It's a big spark, and it comes from the farthest opposite end of what it means to be a Yid, right? What are the three signs of Jews? We mentioned it the other week. We said it's Yevam, Estaf, Ayin, Tes, I think, right? Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomlei Chasadim. Who's the first Yid? Avram Avinu. What's his Midah? Chesed. What are Ammon and Moab critiqued for? Why does Hashem say they can't be Jews? Because when the Jews needed Chesed, they were starving in the wilderness, and Ammon and Moab refused to give us bread and water. So Ammon and Moab is anti-Chesed, which means that they're anti-Jewish. They're anti-Ari Sod. They're anti the fundamental Midah of a Jew is Chesed, is Avram Avinu. So it's the most difficult spark, so to speak, to retrieve, to bring the Kedusha back from Ammon and Moab, right? Think of Ammon and Moab, the people, forget the nation. Ammon and Moab were created through what? Through the very strange relationship of Lot and his daughters. A very perverse thing. It seems to be the antithesis of Kedusha, of holiness, incest. Mamish, the antithesis of holiness. So now, Elimelech and Naomi are on this mission to bring back this spark. Ulahachnis l'kedusha neshamos elu. Right? To bring back Kedusha from Ammon and Moab. Ukamosh mavur bizar chadash sherus va'arpa nizgairu. Now, there's a big discussion amongst the Rishonim and amongst the Midrashim and amongst the Zohar whether or not Rus and Arpa, converted. Right? I mean, if you just read the Pasuk, again, I'll open up Megillas Rus one more time. If you just read the Psukim, it sounds like Machlon and Kilion married non-Jewish women. It says, Vayis'u lahem nashim mo'avios. Right? That they married, Elimelech dies, Naomi is left with her two children, and the fourth pasuk of Megillas Rus is that they, Machlon and Kilion, married Noshim Moavios, one's name was Arpa, one's name was Rus, and they lived there for 10 years, and then Machlon and Kilion die. Right? So Rabbi Meir's Shita in the Medrash is that what? Is that they didn't convert. They married non-Jewish women. But if you look in the Zohar Chadash and Rus, which is what Rav Gedalia Shor is referencing here, the Zohar Chadash Rosh says, Chas v'shalom to say that they didn't convert. They absolutely did convert. Rus is, in fact, her Jewish name. What was her original name? Anyone know? Her original name was Gimel Yud Lamed Yud Tuf, Gilis. Gilit was Rus's Moabite name. And when she converted, she became Rus. Right? As the Vilna Gaon writes in his parish on Rus, Rus is Gematria 606. Non-Jews keep 7 mitzvahs b'nei Noach. When she converted, she took on 606 additional mitzvahs. Right? There's also the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Zayin Amud Beis, that says her name was Rus because she would be blessed to be the mother of David HaMelech. Right? Not the literal mother, but the progenitor of the line of David HaMelech. And David HaMelech will be one who is Riveyu, the one who inundates or saturates HaKadosh Baruch Hu with his Shiros v'tishbachos. So Rus is the lashon of Riveyu v'tishiros, right? Maybe Riveyu is part of the word Rus, and Shiros is Rus v'tishbachos. Okay, so Rus is her Jewish name, it's her Yiddish name. And according to the Zohar Chadash, God forbid to say that Machlon and Kilion would marry Goyim. No, it can't be. They converted. However, we have to understand how conversion works. Their geiris was incomplete. What does that mean? If you look in the Rambam, in Hilchos Yisurei Bia and Perek Yud Gimel, the Rambam talks about a conversion that has to sort of be assessed as it unfolds. Meaning there's points in Jewish history where we don't take converts. There's points in Jewish history where we do take converts. Right? There's conversions that are lecharchila. There are conversions that are suspect. So why did they convert? They converted because, I don't know, they liked Machlon and Kilion. They thought it was a good opportunity for them. I don't know why they married them. Right? But their conversion was, so to speak, dependent upon how it would play out. It was a conversion al-Tanai. Let's read inside. They converted because of some awe that they had for their husbands, right? Or for marriage, for the benefits of marriage. I don't know, that they should be taken care of financially. When a person converts for the sake of marriage, when we're suspect that the conversion is not l'shem shemayim, so we have to see how it plays out. Will this person, in fact, live a life of Torah and mitzvos? The geirus is toloi v'omid. Because if they prove to what? To keep a life of Torah and mitzvos, umekabim aleihem ol Torah mitzvos as a geirus l'mafreya hu geirus kedin. So then retroactively we say, yeah, the geirus apparently was real. But if they end up living a life that is sinful, so we say, no, the geirus was just, you know, to trick the rabbi in order to fake a wedding, to fake a Jewish wedding, and they're not really Jewish. V'lachein omer atzafnas paneach. Sherus shenez gaira achar kach kalacha. So Rus, who continued to cling to Naomi and continued to want to be a Jew, and that's why the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Mem Zayin learns all of the halachos of geirus from the conversation of Rus and Naomi at the end of the first parak. V'kiblal atzma ol Torah u'mitzvos. We see that Rus continues to deepen her connection to Torah and mitzvos. So therefore, the geirus that she had at the time that she married what? Machlon, we see retroactively, is a good geirus. As a geirus shenaz gaira l'shem ishus, kishenaseis l'machlon, haisa geirus l'mafraya. We see, from the way that the story plays out, we see that Rus was sincere, she was real. As opposed to Arpa, who, when her mother-in-law pressures her, go back to your people, she eventually goes back to her people. So Arpa, retroactively, her geirus is not a geirus, right? She's not really a Jew. And that's why we have some very big non-Jews who come from her, such as Goliath, who fights against David. V'lachei nikra b'shem Machlon and Kilion. Look at their names. Machlon is a lashon of what? Of a machla. What's a machla? A machla means an illness. But when a person has a machla, the hope is what? We daven that they should heal. They should get better. Right? That something good should come from it. Shahaya lo takana livasof. So Machlon, while Machlon maybe was imperfect marrying this non-Jewish woman, right? But something very good would come from it in the end. Rus would prove to be a sincere convert, and she would become the mother of the Davidic dynasty. Aval Kilion, but the other son of Naomi and Elimelech, who married Arpa, Shalonis Gaira Livasof, Lohaya Lo Takana. And therefore, his name, while Machlon represents a temporary illness that hopefully will be healed, and sometimes after going through an illness, you develop, like we're seeing now, you develop antibodies, which actually protect the person, right? You develop a means of fighting the virus, so to speak. So something actually very good comes from it. Kilion means what? Kilion's a lashon of destruction, right? Of complete destruction. As if to say nothing good comes from it. Va'ayin b'gemara b'vabasra. The Ma'ariv Makom is incorrect. It's actually tzadi aleph amud beis. Where the Gemara Bava Basra 91b says that the real names of Machlon and Kilion were Yoash and Saraf, as we know from Divrei Hayamim. Yoash and Saraf, those are the real names. Yoash is Machlon, who married Rus. Saraf is Kilion, who married Arpa. Vashemos ha'elu gam came ifurashim al derech haneskerleel. And the names in the Gemara are also explained in a similar fashion. Namely, Yoash means Shinisiaishu, that they gave up hope of Gula. Right? And Saraf means they deserve to be burnt and destroyed for what? For abandoning the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, for marrying these non-Jewish women. But again, Yayush, hopefully, is something that a person can regain confidence, regain hope. That's Machlon. Machlon means a temporary bad situation, but hopefully you can bounce back. Saraf, Sreifa. Chever, what's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita and Mesechachim? Ein bir chametz al Sreifa. Why is he saying that the only way to destroy is Sreifa? Because Sreifa is the greatest form of destruction. So that's Kilion. It's a complete obliteration, complete destruction. Okay? So in the end, something very good comes from Machlon, namely his marriage to Rus. And again, it's really Rus's effort to move things forward, to be a Ger Tzedek. So it says of Gedaliah Yisrael, Pipnimius, now we understand why we needed a galus. They had to go into galus to retrieve this holy spark called Rus. And because of their low madrega, they had to go get it. They couldn't bring it. They couldn't bring it to themselves. But who did get Rus brought right to him? A yid by the name of Boaz. Boaz was the shofate. According to Chazal, the shofate who you encounter in Sefer Shoftim, whose name is Ivtzan, is another name for Boaz. Boaz, Shadarshu Chazal, Bo-Oz, Boaz. The one who is what? Who has the Oz. What's Oz? The Oz of Torah. Sheish Bo Oz Shel Torah, that he had the strength of Torah. He is the Gadol Hador, he's the Tzaddik. He didn't have to go chasing after Rus. Rus was brought right into his field. He didn't have to go collecting Kedusha. He's like that magnet that the Arachayim HaKadosh is describing. He gathered in the Kedusha Moav, and he was zochet to be the father of that line, which would produce David HaMelech and Malchus Beis David, and by extension, Mashiach. Okay, so an amazing way to kind of learn through Megillas Rus, to pay attention to Megillas Rus. Well, this whole Indian of going into Gullus to try to retrieve something, to make sure that we come back with something. And again, I think it's a good question for us to ask ourselves, right? What am I going to bring back from this experience of Gullus, of being exiled from each other, being exiled from our shuls, being exiled from the world, right? This is a form of Gullus we're experiencing now. So what do I want to bring back? What do I want to collect? And how can I make sure that next time the Kedusha is drawn to me like a magnet and I don't have to go into weird and unusual places to try to retrieve something new? Okay, Chaver, last but not least, one more short little piece. There's a Yerushalmi in Maseches Rosh Hashanah in the fourth parak. This Yerushalmi, if you want to see it, it's quoted additionally in the Talmud Bavli in Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Beis Amid Beis. If you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, in his parish on Rosh Hashanah Lamed Beis Amid Beis, at the bottom of the page, you'll see it there. Yerushalmi says an amazing thing about Shavuos, and we end with this. V'chol ha-karbanos ksiv chet, uva-tzeres ein ksiv chet. The Yerushalmi says, if you open up Parshas Pinchas, you'll notice when it goes through the Karbanos that by all of the holidays, the Karban Chatas, right, is described as a Chatas, as Chet, as a Tikkun for Chet. But by the Karban of Shavuos, again, if you just look in Parshas Pinchas and Parachav Ches and Bamidbar, it says what? It says, Si'ir izim echad. So what do you expect the next word to be? Lechatas, right? Si'ir izim echad lechatas. No, it's not what it says. If you look, let's say, by Rosh Chodesh, Si'ir izim echad lechatas. If you look by Pesach, lechatas. You look by the other holidays, the Si'ir izim is lechatas. But by Shavuos, it says, Si'ir izim echad lechaper aleichem. Si'ir izim, right? One male of the goats is lechaper aleichem. Well, if there's kapara, I guess that implies there's sin. But it doesn't mention chet. Interesting. It doesn't mention chatas. It doesn't mention chet by Shavuos. The question is why? Says the Talmud Yerushalmi, an amazing, amazing teaching. Amar lei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mikeivan shekibaltem aleichem ol Torah, ki'ilu lo chatu miyameichem. However, Torah is so powerful that when a person accepts upon himself Torah, it erases all chet. Kamosha be'ez kabbalah satorah. Hayecheirus mi'etzahara v'cheirus v'malach amavetz. When we stood at our Sinai, we achieved, we were b'nei chayrin, right? We were b'nei chayrin. We were free people. Freed from what? Chazal say freed from the etzahara, freed from the malach amavetz, freed from our averos, hayu b'nei Yisrael nekiyah mechet. And therefore, every year on Shavuos, when we bring the Karbanos of Shavuos, it says that there's Kapara, but it doesn't say that there's Chet, because the Kapara has replaced the Chet. The more we accept Torah in our lives, the more clean we'll be. Torah scrubs us clean. And Rav Gedaliah Shor says, and that doesn't mean that from this day forward, because of my commitment to Torah, I'll do less averos. It's much deeper than that. V'lo dai shemehayom v'halah ha-Torah v'shmartan shol yachta. It's not just that this from this day forward, through my acceptance of Torah, the Torah will what? Will stop me from doing averos. That by accepting Torah retroactively, Torah is one with tshuva. Torah has this awesome ability to be mechaper. I once read an explanation from Rav Moshe Tursky Zatzal, Rav Meir Tursky's brother, the holy tzaddik who lost his life, was killed in the Har Nof massacre a number of years ago. So Rav Moshe Tursky Zatzal said that if Yom Kippur, think about it like this, if Yom Kippur, which is the day where we got the Luchos Shnios, right, the second Luchos, were given to us on Yom Kippur, is a day of Kabbalah Satorah, and Yom Kippur is such a day of what? Of Kapara. So that means Shavuos, which is an even bigger day of Kabbalah Satorah. Right? I mean, Yom Kippur very much is a day of Kabbalah Satorah, even though we don't emphasize that aspect sometimes enough. But Yom Kippur is a day of receiving Torah. So yet, this awesome Kapara, so Shavuos, my friends, Shavuos, which is an even greater day of Kabbalah Satorah, for sure brings tremendous, tremendous potential for Kapara. So says Rav Gedalia Yeshua, when we accept upon ourselves Torah and mitzvahs, it erases retroactively our chet. It's mamash an awesome kapara. Like the Mishnah says, merachakto menachet. It's merachik chet, right? It says in Parakinyan Torah, the sixth parak of Avos, what we call the sixth parak of Avos. Parakinyan Torah, it says that when a person learns Torah lishma, when a person accepts upon himself a life of Torah, it's merachig, it distances him from chet. What does that mean? When the Mishnah already told us, it cleanses you to become a tzaddik and a chassid. So obviously, if I'm a tzaddik and a chassid, I'm not doing averos. Says Rav Gedalia Yeshua, bevadai lo yechtem u tzaddik v'chassid. If I'm a tzaddik and a chassid, I'm not doing averos. So what does it mean it distances me from sin? Not just towards my future, but it distances me from the sins of my past. It serves as a kapara. And the kavanas ha-mishnah hu, la'achatom shekvar asa, the averos I already did, become erased through Torah. Shemarchik esa'odom me'elu ha-chatoim. Shemesalik yimenu ha-pagam shenasa b'neshmasu al yedei achet. Right? When I learn Torah, when I do an avera, we spoke about this once. Every time you do an avera, two things happen. You violate the will of Hashem, and you make yourself dirty. Right? Your soul becomes dirtied. So when I learn Torah, right, that doesn't necessarily, again, maybe it does, but it doesn't necessarily, saying, erase the Avera in terms of, you know, my scorecard in Shemayim, the fact that what? The fact that I did something against Hashem. I have to follow probably the regular pattern of tshuva to erase that. I have to confess, and I have to commit not to do it again, etc., etc., right? But the fact that I rolled around in the mud, there's no better mikvah to wash off the stains than Torah. And that's what he's saying here, right? It distances me from the chet. If the chet has left a stain on my soul, so that pagam can be erased through Torah. Ukamoshi adua haperish, bahasha'amru chazal, avera goreres avera, shal yedea chet nasa roshem benishmaso. Right? An avera causes an avera. What does that mean? An avera drags along with it another avera. That a chet makes a roshem on your soul. Again, it's not just you get an X on your report card. It's that the avera actually stains you. It causes a mark on your soul. And now that I've become, you know, just a simple mushel. A person's, you know, eating spaghetti and meatballs. Yeah? And you're sitting there in a very clean white shirt. Right? And you're being very careful not to stain your shirt. Right, but then you drop a meatball on your shirt. So now your shirt is already stained. So do you continue to eat with the same degree of caution? At this point, your shirt's going, your shirt's going to have to undergo serious washing either way, right? So you're not as careful anymore, because once you've already stained yourself, all right. So when I was hopefully not perfectly clean, so I wanted to remain perfectly clean. Once I got dirty already, so like what's the difference to make if I get a little dirtier? So that's called the Avera Goreres Avera, the mashal. When a person does an avera and now he's a little bit dirty, so he's less bothered by becoming more dirty. So the stain on one's soul is nimsha; it draws a person to more averos. Valyadei lima Torah, but when I learn Torah, I distance myself from that roshem. I erase that stain. And then I'm able to what? I'm able to hopefully make better choices as I distance myself from the stain of my past. But however, let's end the piece. The Yerushalmi says very clearly, let's read the words of the Yerushalmi very carefully. Shalo amru lo me Torah. If you look in the Yerushalmi, it doesn't say that what? That a person who learns Torah, right? It's ki'ilu lo chatu mi'amecham. But rather, as Rav Gedalia Shor often emphasizes at the end of his pieces, when he's speaking, you could hear he's speaking to Bnei Yeshiva. He's speaking to the Talmidim of Torah Vadas. And by extension, he's speaking to us. He says, if you look at the Yerushalmi carefully, what are the words? Kibaltem aleichem ol Torah. It's not just about how many hours of learning did you do on Shavuos and throughout the year, but did you accept upon yourself the yoke of Torah, the responsibility of Torah? Do you carry the avdus of Torah? Sha'ikar hu kabbalas ol, right? To wear the yoke, to take upon yourself the full responsibility. It's a weighty responsibility. Ki yesh harbe shalom dim Torah, aval hi below kabbalas ol. There are people who learn Torah, but they don't feel meshubed to Torah. They don't feel indebted. They don't feel the sense of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Esesichem Eretz Mitzrayim, Mibeis Avadim, I took you out of the servitude of Mitzrayim, to what? To be an Eved for me. And again, an Eved doesn't mean a slave to God, God forbid, but it's a deep, deep sense of binding responsibility. Va'ikar Shamuta Ha'adam, Sheyekabo Alav Ol Shel HaTorah. And the Ikar is not just what? To learn a little Torah on the side, right? But to feel that I'm an Eved Hashem. To be makabel upon myself to be an Eved Hashem through and through. And when a person does that, then the Yerushalmi says, Ki'ilu lo chatu mi'amechem. Then there's no carbon chata, so there's no mention of chatas by the Yom Tov of Shuas and Parshas Pinchas. Vayedeze ma'ala alav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ki'ilu lo chatu mi'amav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu scrubs you clean, and it's as if you never sinned in your life. Okay? So, Chaver, two very beautiful teachings. Really beautiful teachings. Number one, we have to be spark collectors, always on the lookout, trying to bring back those holy sparks that have fallen into Galus when we find ourselves in Galus. But ideally, we should become magnets of Kedusha, that the Kedusha should be drawn to us more than we have to go running around chasing after it. And secondly, the power of Torah to not only transform us in terms of, you know, being better tomorrow because of the Torah I learned today, but the Torah helping us to serve as a device of tshuva, to cleanse ourselves from our mistakes of the past. All right, we should be zocha to Kabbalas Ol, not just Kabbalas HaTorah, but Kabbalas Ol HaTorah.